and welcome to the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour. I've got lots to come for you on the show this evening. We'll be chatting about the Olympics, reviewing the Belgian Grand Prix, getting reaction to this afternoon's All-Ireland football final, and I've got a giveaway for you as well. So let's get into it. With Gaelic Games, where Armagh clinched the All-Ireland Senior Football title in their clash against Galway at Croke Park today. The final score was Armagh 1-11 to Galway 13 points. Day 2 of the Paris Games continues this afternoon with plenty of Irish action still to come. Mona McSharry will return to the pool later this evening for the semi-finals of the women's 100 metre breaststroke. However, there was bad news in the boxing ring as Aidan Walsh and Gráinne Walsh both fell to first round defeats in their respective divisions. Jack Marley will attempt to stop the rot when he takes to the ring to face Mateusz Bereznicki from Poland. Elsewhere, the equestrian team moved up 3 places to 8th ahead of tomorrow's show jumping phase. It has taken a toll, however, as Sarah Ennis and Action Lady M will not take part due to an injury to the horse. Aoife Clark will come into the team for tomorrow's final round with Sportsfield Freelance. The women's rugby seven side are facing South Africa after an earlier loss to Great Britain in their group stage match. And finally, the sailing pair of Robert Dixon and Sean Waddellove lie in second place after a big win in the third of their 3 races in the men's skiff in Marseille. In local soccer news, striker Rory Keating has left St Patrick's Athletic by mutual consent and joined Cork City FC. The 29-year-old attacker returns to City, where he scored 13 league goals last season. Finally, in Formula 1, there was a surprise 1-2 finish for Mercedes at the Belgian Grand Prix this afternoon. George Russell was first to take the chequered flag, followed closely by teammate Lewis Hamilton in second and McLaren's Oscar Piastri in third. However, Russell has been disqualified in the last couple of minutes for an underweight car, handing the win to his teammate. Okay, before I get into the sporting action, I have got a giveaway for all of you golf fans out there. The 2024 KPMG Women's Irish Open is coming to Carton House in Maynooth from August 29th to September 1st. And we are giving you the chance to be right there in amongst the action with huge thanks to Forefront Sports. You'll be able to cheer on Irish golfing heroes like Leona Maguire and Lauren Walsh as they compete to be part of golfing history. So the lucky winner will win a pair of VIP hospitality tickets for Thursday, the 29th of August. And all you have to do to win is answer this question. What is the term for the person who carries a golfer's bag and clubs? All you need to do to enter is text your name and the answer to that question to 0868104106, and I'll be announcing the winner before the end of the show this evening. That number again is 0868104106, and the very best of luck to all of you. And I'm going to start the show with a quick rewind to the McCarthy Insurance Cork GAA Premier SFC Group A clash on Friday evening between Newcestown and Éire Óg. Newcestown came out on top on a final scoreline of 12 points to Éire Óg's 10 points to get their campaign up and running. Ger McCarthy was at the game on Friday night and had this match report along with a roundup of the rest of the evening's action.
Newcestown got their 2024 McCarthy Insurance Group A Premier Senior Football Championship campaign off to a winning start in Clitove on Friday evening. Defeating Éire Óg 12 points to 10, last year's Senior A double winning county champions returned to the top tier of Cork football with a bang. The winner's first championship outing of the season ended in victory thanks to a full team effort, despite only scoring 3 times in the second half. Elsewhere, on a busy night of football across the county, Nemo Rangers got the better of Ballincollig in the same Premier Senior Football Championship Group A. Elsewhere, St Finbar's defeated Douglas 110 to 10 points. Valley Rovers and Mallow drew 112 apiece. In the Intermediate A Football Championship, St Vincent's were defeated 115 to 18 by Mitchelstown, while Boherbui overcame Na Piarsaigh 122 to 06. In the Senior A Football Championship, Kanturk edged Donny 17 points to 15 points. For Corkshire FM's Big Red Bench, I'm Ger McCarthy.
Let's hear now from the two team managers. First off, Ayr Óg's Paddy Casan and then Noosestown's Jim O'Sullivan.
Okay, Paddy Casan, obviously disappointment for Ayr Óg tonight. Did you just leave yourselves with too much to do in the second half, having fallen 5 points behind?
Look, we were bitterly disappointed where we were at half time, but look, we still felt we were still in the game. We just needed to start the second half well, which we kind of did. But I suppose we probably left a few chances behind us, you know. And I think we had a goal chance early in the second half, and then once we didn't get probably the score we're taking over, we kind of forced a couple of shots. We were well in the game, and look, we were battling away, and we were fighting, but we just didn't have that bit of composure or clinical edge in our play. It's disappointing. We came here to win.
Yeah, disappointing. You were reminding your players just to stay calm. They missed a couple of chances there towards the end, but you were the one chasing the game. You were the one setting the tempo. You held Noosa's down to 2 points. And was it just the fact there, that goal chance late on that was cleared off the line, that really was the deciding or the turning point?
Well, I don't know. It was a turning point, but I suppose when we missed that, I think they came up then, and you see it happens in games. They're going to get some energy or some, obviously get a couple of opportunities, and they countered then, and they kind of finished the game then strong after that. I suppose it was a great opportunity. It was great, probably one of our better moves in the second half. We kind of cut them open, but look, I suppose we had chances, but unfortunately, we didn't take them on the night. And that's the name of the game, but look, we've got to suck it up and move on.
Yeah, it doesn't get any easier, but does it help with the fact that Ballincollig and Emo so well preparing for those games?
I think at senior level we're all kind of fairly familiar now with Division 1 League and so on, but look, as you said, the challenge gets steeper if anything, but as I said, this is the level we're at. You're top 12 teams in the county in football, and the lads have hurling now first, and that's the important thing, and the juniors out tomorrow night, and as I said, you just have to, as I said, suck it up for now and move on and learn and get on with it.
Thanks very much, Paddy.
No bother.
Cheers. Congratulations, Jim O'Sullivan. Fresh out of the Senior A Football Championship as county champions. Never easy making a step back up, but you did it tonight. You beat Ayr Óg to get your season up and running. Before we talk about the game, how important and gratifying is it just to get those points on the board?
It is very important. I suppose the first game is always a lot of pressure on it, because there's a lot of emphasis put in the first game. And plus as well, when you're going to hurling next week, you don't want to be going to after losing the opening round or game in the football. So, trying to be coming down here and taking the 2 points.
9 points in the first half, not as many in the second half, let's put it that way. 3 points in the second half, but from your point of view, does it really matter now, or is there lots to work on?
You obviously have things to work on. I thought the first half we were excellent, and we got some great scores. I don't know what happened at half time, but look, in fairness, Ayr Óg were always going to come out and attack us, and I suppose we left them too many opportunities to do so. We lost a lot of ball up in their half of the pitch, and they came down and they capitalised on it. So I think we consolidated it then towards the end. We got a couple of great scores, and that saw us over the line.
This kind of experience playing at this top level, top 12 clubs in the country, it doesn't get any better. It's not going to get any easier either. You've got Ballincollig, you've got Nemo coming up. How much of a boost will it give the players to have those points in the back pocket?
Well, it's a huge boost. But every grade you go to, is with the way the competitions run now, every group is tough. So when you're up playing senior, premier senior, it's really tough. And when our lads are going playing hurling, it makes it tougher again. But we deserve the right to be here from last year's win, and we're delighted to be up here. We're delighted with the win tonight, and we'll have to just take it from here for Ballincollig the next day.
Excellent stuff. Well done.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, we're going to move on now to Camogie, because as you would have heard on the bench with Dan and Ger yesterday evening, the Cork Camogie ladies booked their place in the All-Ireland final yesterday afternoon with their win. But who will they be facing? Well, it was Galway and Tipperary in the other semi-final, and Galway did come out on top in that battle, so they will face Cork in that All-Ireland final on August 11th. Let's hear from the two sides now. First from Galway's Cathal Murray and Niamh Mallon, and finally from Tipperary's Dennis Kelly.
Col, I suppose the fact it's taken us a couple of minutes to take this interview probably speaks volumes. A special day for your side.
Listen, it was really hard probably for us the last couple of years, you know, losing the semi-final. And, you know, today was all about getting over the line. And to be honest with you, the whole year has really been about getting to a semi-final and winning it. You know, we need to get back to Croke Park. We need to get back to the final. So we're just absolutely delighted, to be honest with you.
It felt like a day where you had to win the game a couple of times. You had the good start, then they got the goal. Then they went 2 points ahead. You know, you had to keep continuously answering questions out there.
Yeah, answering questions. And listen, in fairness, we've always talked about the character on the team and the resilience they show. You know, they're just a really, really special group of girls. And yeah, as you said, we great start. Tipperary answered, got a great goal. You know, Neve got a great goal just after half time and got us ahead again. But look, at last few minutes, 2 points down, 5 minutes to go or whatever. You know, most teams give up, most teams would cave in, but not this team, to be honest with you. They showed huge, huge character. I think we got huge momentum off the bench. You know, four girls come on, all contributors, and listen, really, really happy. Just quality scores and some brilliant performances, and as I said, we're just delighted.
It's probably easy to say now, is it peaking at the right time?
I don't know, it needs to peak at the right time. Listen, Cork are an unbelievable side. You know, I don't think any team is coming in 10 points to be honest with you in the championship. They just seem to have gone to a level, you know, way higher than last year. We certainly haven't reached that level yet, but listen, that game is going to bring us on a lot, and we've another 2 weeks now to work on things. But we really need to work hard now, in fairness. You know, it's a huge challenge in 2 weeks time. But as I said, the last 2 years, you know, losing here and losing to Croke Park and 2-2 to Kilkenny, that was tough. And you know, watching the Ireland final and not being involved, and you know, that's where you want to be in the last Sunday in August, or the middle of August now as it is. But you know, we're just delighted to get over the line. You know, last year walking off, it was full of Cork here and I was full of Galway people, and that's what you want to see. It's been a brilliant year so far with the footballers and ladies footballers, and you know, it's great now that we're a part of that, especially for the next 2 weeks.
Special scenes still on around the pitch here as well, full of colour, full of emotion.
Oh yeah, it is, of course. And then I suppose the game was a brilliant effort for Camogie, I would imagine. Look, Tipper a super team and gave some unbelievable performance out there, and listen, it could have gone either way, you know, no doubt about that. But as I said, the last few minutes is all about Galway and all about our character, and we're just delighted. The players all stepped up. As I said, we got a huge impact off the bench, and I thought that, you know, the backs in the second half were absolutely exceptional. So we're just delighted. But a huge amount to improve on, but we're delighted to be there.
Sorry, I got to ask as well, at the end, my phone is blown up. Was there a coming together, or did something happen afterwards?
No, listen, these things happen. Look, we felt that the ball is probably picked up off the line, and, you know, Tipperary let's stand in the way. Then things happen. It's going to be blown up, I'm sure. It's on camera, people are probably going to make a big deal of it. But listen, I've got a lot of respect for the Tipperary mentors. I know Dennis for a long time, I know Eamon Cochran for a long time. They've done a super, super job with this team, and, you know, there's no doubt about it, they're going to get over the line in the semi-final at some stage. They're a super team. It could have gone either way today, and they were brilliant league champions, and it took a huge performance in the second half from us to get over the line, so we're just delighted.
And this Croke Park to look forward to, building on a result like this, is all what you're looking to focus on now, I guess.
Oh yeah, that's what we're focusing on. It needs to be. Look at if we can build in the last 10 minutes or the second half even, we'll be delighted. But look, we need a massive performance. It's going to take an unbelievable performance in Croke Park, but our Galway team capable of it, of course, there. But it's as I said, Cork have brought it to a different level, and you know, we need to get there fairly fast now. But listen, we're there, we're delighted to be there, and we'll give it our best crack.
Best luck in the final. Okay, call. Thank you very much.
Yeah, massive. You know, it was touch and go at times, and we knew it'd be nothing different, you know, against Tipperary. They've probably been the form team over the group stages, and we knew what they were going to bring today, and we had them fight fire with fire, and thankfully we did in the second half, and were able to get over the line.
Your 2 points before half time felt vital.
Yeah, look, you know, I suppose we had a lot of possession in the first half, and we just didn't convert, and efficiency's everything in this game. You watch the hurling, you watch, you know, the Cork Limerick game, you watch Cork Clare, and efficiency trumps, and we weren't efficient in the first half, and thank God in the second half we were able to turn a few more scores.
Piece of beautiful skill in for the goal.
Like, you know, I think you just play it as you see it. You know, you don't really think too much about it. You know, you put the ball in your hurling, just run towards the net, and thankfully it went in.
And just what was the last couple of moments like? I could hardly watch on up in the press box. It was just chaotic. It was going one way then the other.
Yeah, like I'm really delighted for Carrie Dolan. You know, she put so much into her freeze, and I suppose, you know, after the league final, that hurt her a lot, and I'm just delighted that she got a bit of redemption today, and it's great for her to get the winner.
Such a sea of maroon here now as well. It's a busy weekend for everyone involved in Galway.
Yeah, it is. You know, I suppose that's one down, and there's a big one tomorrow, but we've done our part, and that's all that matters this evening.
Back to the day job now, and back to the footballers tonight, is it?
Tomorrow. It's an exciting day for everybody involved in Galway tomorrow. And yeah, I suppose I'm back to work tomorrow, I suppose. But yeah, the lads are in great form, and hopefully they can do the business as well.
When you came down and met home down here, did you think there were special days like this ahead?
No, to be honest, I didn't. I've been working in Galway a long time, and these are people dream of playing in All Ireland finals, and I suppose that was never something that entered my head. But I've 2 weeks to think about it now, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Pro Park beckons for quite a few journeys there for you on a personal note in the next couple of weeks.
Tomorrow I've no control over, but in 2 weeks time hopefully I will, and I'm really looking forward to it, and it's great to be part of it.
Special times, enjoy. Thanks,
cheers.
Yeah, absolutely devastated. We put in a savage effort. It was, nip and tuck all the way coming down towards the home stretch. We looked like we nearly had it. And then Galway, they showed their character and probably a bit of experience, and they dug it out. But it was very, very fine margins. It's a tough one to take.
You started the game probably not as you would have liked, but then responded ever so well with the goal and really pushed on there before half-time.
Yeah, we were happy the way we responded, a little bit maybe slow to start. But again, look, there's nerves there. And that's part of it. But again, once we got going, we were going well. But we just maybe missed a couple of chances that we'd normally score. That wind maybe was deceiving a little bit, and we pulled a few to the left there in the second half, especially, which were disappointing. But overall, our girls give us absolutely everything. We can't fault any of them, and all year, and their families and clubs can be proud because they gave us absolutely everything. But just unfortunately, came up short.
The second half was, I suppose, a real battle, real grind. Galway come back, got the goal, but then they went 20 minutes without scoring. Is it a frustration that you didn't push on during that period, perhaps?
Yeah, it is. It definitely is. We were on top there, but weren't taking it on the scoreline. So that was disappointing. And, we had a bit of ball, but just didn't make use of it properly, probably. But at the same time, it's very hard to pinpoint at this stage. You'd have to review it and see. But they gave it everything. Didn't work out for us. But, these girls will be back. There's huge character in that dressing room. They've keep coming back. And, eventually they will get there.
I was talking to Sarah up in the press box, is that if Tip get two ahead, that's it. You did get the two. Did you think you had it then, or was there always going to be a danger in the story?
There was always danger in the story. Definitely we probably could have, maybe there was one or two soft frees in front of the goals. I thought definitely Clodagh McIntyre could have got a free, but we needed just that little bit of luck to get that extra three or four out. You'd never be happy so close to Galway, and they proved they're big game players, and unfortunately we came out on the wrong side of it.
Very emotional now, but I suppose it has been a good year, a lot of progress, a lot of development.
Yeah, definitely. Look, we have a league final this year. We won the Munster Championship last year, so we're winning titles, but we just need to get to the final, and we need to win the big one, and it's just getting away from us at the minute. But definitely these girls will be back. There'll be younger girls coming through. The future is definitely bright in Tipperary.
Such small margins, isn't it?
It is, it's whiskers really, and that's what happens in semi-finals. The other one was a little bit more one-sided, but we knew Galway were going to be a huge test for us, and it's just one puck of a ball, but it's 12 months again before you can go back and revisit.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thanks. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Yeah, certainly a very exciting matchup coming up in a couple of weeks' time. Now, you may not know it, but there is a thriving AFL community here in Ireland, particularly in Cork. And next week, both the men's and women's national teams will be jetting off to Toronto to compete in the Transatlantic Cup against other teams from Europe and the Americas. I had the chance earlier this afternoon to speak with Owen O'Sullivan, who is coach of the Irish national men's team. So let's have a listen to that now. I'm delighted to be joined now on the Big Red Bench by Owen O'Sullivan from AFL Ireland. Owen, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
I know you've got a lot of exciting stuff coming up, but I think maybe a good place to start would be to ask about the AFL community in Ireland in general, because I think most people would obviously associate the AFL with Australia and may even be wondering how it got started here. How would you describe that journey, I suppose, for people that aren't aware?
It's kind of a thriving community again at the moment. We'd have teams kind of all over the country, and then we'd have university teams, men's and women's, kind of in the major cities like Cork, Galway, Dublin, Belfast. There's teams cropping up in Kerry and around the Midlands as well. So it's a great community to be part of, especially at university when I suppose people are looking for something new and something interesting to try out. There's lots of men and women have gone over and played professionally and I suppose semi-professionally in Australia as well. So look, it's just another sport. It's kind of a mix, really, of, I suppose, GAA and basketball and rugby and everything else. And it's a good community to be part of. I've been involved in it myself for longer than I care to remember, to be honest. And no, it's brilliant. It's great fun. And I mean, some people take it to a serious level and try and make national teams. Other people play for the social aspect of it. And it's just a really good place to be.
Yeah, speaking of the national teams, I know there's a big competition coming up in Toronto next week, the Transatlantic Cup. Can you tell me a bit more about that?
Yeah, so previously every 3 years there would have been an unofficial World Cup. It would have been called the International Cup, but that was postponed during COVID, and now kind of leading back into it. It used to be in Australia, leading back into it. The AFL have decided on regional competitions, so this competition will be the Transatlantic Cup, would be for European teams and teams in the Americas. So next week the Irish men and women will be jetting over to Toronto for 2.5 weeks to hopefully go well and try and win the inaugural Transatlantic Cup. We'll have teams like France and GB and Canada, USA, Colombia, lots of teams, men's and women's teams all competing. It's full 18 sides on a full size oval field. For anyone who doesn't know, AFL has played on an oval field. And yeah, we've been preparing and training hard the last, I suppose, 6 or 7 months at this stage, really, since the turn of the year. And we're kind of quietly confident. Previously, we've won the European Championships. Again, the men and the women have won the European Championships. They were in Zagreb in 2022. So we're kind of in a good place, we think, going over, but kind of going into uncharted waters too, playing the likes of the Americas teams. They're going to be fit and athletic and physical. So we'll see how we go.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear the spread of countries that you mentioned there, and the fact that it has reached, it sounds like, kind of all four corners, which is amazing. Which countries do you think, based on, I suppose, current form and what you would have seen previously in those European competitions, which countries do you think pose the biggest challenges for Irish teams that are going over?
Well, I'm coaching the men's team myself, and I know that we had a real kind of tough battle against France in the European Championships final 2 years ago. And since then, we've been over to London a couple of times for trial games, and Team GB gave us a bit of a hammering there at the turn of the year when we were just getting together. I think we're probably in a better place than we are now. They've really kind of licked their wounds from Zagreb in 22, and they've come back bigger and stronger. So the two European teams that would kind of pose the most threat would be France and GB. Then I suppose over on the other side of the Atlantic, Canada are kind of traditionally very good. They have a lot of Aussie expats who play in their domestic league. But you can't overlook the USA, even though Canada are at home in a sense. The USA team are, like, I've watched their games online and stuff. They're big physical boys. They're athletic. They're strong. They love contact and things like that. Then the women's side of things, GB again will be a huge threat to the Irish team. But Canada, I think Ireland are ranked number one, and Canada are very close behind them in the world rankings at number two. And again, I think a lot of it is down to the Australian expats who play over there, and the Canadian women would learn a hell of a lot from playing against Aussies each week. So I think Canada will be the main threat for the Irish women in the Transatlantic Cup.
And it was great to hear that there's a heavy Cork presence in both the squads. I understand the majority kind of coming through university teams, which you mentioned earlier on. Can you share a bit more about the overall makeup of the squad and the selection process that's involved there?
I can indeed. So we're quite proud of our university. I'd almost call it like a nursery for AFL and AFLW here. And Cork UCC are very, very strong, as are MTU. MTU women are the European champions at the moment. And the UCC men are the European champions for AFL as well, at university level. So, players, I think, get a great basis for the game. They come into AFL with no kind of inhibitions or bad habits. They're just young, athletic men and women who want to play a new sport. So they're given kind of adequate coaching and they play well throughout the college year during the winter. But then when, say, trials for national teams come up and they want to play during the summer, you're playing kind of on harder ground, and it's not a wet or soggy pitch or a football. So the skills are just a little bit crisper, and they're playing against maybe experienced players, but also playing with experienced players. So the skill level goes up and up. And the current makeup of the national teams, Now I kind of have to get a little plug in for the two teams in Cork. So there's the Leaside Lions men's and the Cork Vikings women's. They're both the Irish Premiership champions at the moment, and they do make up quite a nice percentage of the national team squads. I think it's 14 of the 28 of the men's are from the Leaside Lions, and I think it's 13 of the 28 for the women's are from the Cork Vikings. So almost 50%, which is, it's a huge boost of confidence for the clubs here, but it's also kind of a nice kind of pat on the back for the coaches who are involved with both those teams. You know?
Absolutely, yeah, great to hear. And you mentioned the Premiership Champions. That's the domestic competition. So for those who aren't aware, what is kind of the format of that competition? Who are the other teams involved? Because I know you had said that there are different areas of the country now that are starting to pop up with their own teams.
Yeah, so no, we wouldn't have full-size AFL ovals here in Ireland, so we wouldn't get to play 18-a-side. Like, just for instance, an AFL oval could be 160 metres long and 110 metres wide. So what we play is we play kind of a hybrid version, still the very same rules, but we play 14-a-side on the GAA field, and we kind of oval off the edges. So it's not as long and it's not as wide. But our Premiership competition, for men's and women's, we would have teams again dotted around the country. At Premiership level, we'd have, say, the Cork teams, the Dublin teams, the Galway teams, and the Belfast teams. And then we'd have Tier 2 teams would be in around the Midlands or Kerry getting up and running. And how we play it would be, if Dublin were hosting Cork, then both the men's and women's teams in Cork would travel up on the same day, play at the same location, and play kind of one game after the other. And it would be the same thing. So you'd have a home and away season where you play each team at home once and each team away once. So you'd have maybe a game every second or third weekend, and you might be at home versus Galway, away versus Belfast, a home versus Dublin, then say away to Galway or whatever kind of way it works out. Then you get the finals, so the top three teams would qualify for finals. Second and third would play semi-final or the preliminary final, we call it, and then you'd face off against a team in first place in the grand final. So it's quite a busy schedule. It goes right through usually from around late April, early May, right through to around the start of September usually. But the big kind of curse for teams is if you win the domestic championship, the Irish or the AFL Ireland Premiership, then you get to represent AFL Ireland at the AFL European Champions League, which is a one-day event, and it's usually held, I think last year it was in Lyon, previous to that I was in Amsterdam, it could be in London, it could be in any major city around Europe, where all the domestic champions come and play off in one day in a 9-a-side version. So it's really quick games. You could be playing up to 6 games a day. It's just a fantastic atmosphere and a tough game. It's a good fun.
Yeah, a lot going on, it sounds like, in that competition. And I actually had a look at the schedule before coming on to chat to you, and it seems like for the Premiership, it's getting to the sharp end of the season with the finals coming up in September. And obviously then you have this Transatlantic Cup kind of stuck in the middle of that. From a coaching perspective, have you actually found that helpful? I suppose at least the players are sharp if a bit maybe kind of fatigued, I suppose, coming into the end of the season.
So yeah, that was a conversation we had at the beginning of the year with the AFL Ireland committee, and they asked and said, look, would you look to have maybe the Premiership wrapped up before you travel? And I put it by, we have a kind of a leadership group of a few more experienced players, and we put it to them, and their thing was, we want to be playing, we want to be competitive right the way through, we don't want to be wrapped in kind of cotton wool, which I completely agree with. So my counterpart in the women's team, Shane, was the very same and said, yeah, we'd rather players playing right up until the moment they go. And that's kind of how we've done it. So like you said, the Premiership season is coming towards kind of the tail end of it, with finals we played after we come back from Toronto. Hopefully we come back kind of successful, but our players, like you said, now are sharp and ready. They've been playing competitively against each other as well as training with each other, and I just think that's the best way forward. It's kind of stood well across the last couple of years since I've been involved, and I don't believe in kind of not representing your club just because you're on a national team. I think that the club is what comes first. So if, say, the South Dublin Swans or the Galway Magpies need you to play, you don't kind of say, I can't because I have national training next week. That's not kind of how we go forward. I'd rather you played with your club, and then if you're available for training after, fantastic, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anyone who's listening to this, one who's kind of only hearing about this for the first time and wants to know more or maybe get involved themselves, what's the best way for them to do that?
I think reaching out on socials. I wouldn't be huge on social media myself, but I know that Florian would have a great presence on the likes of Instagram and Facebook and things like that. So if you drop them a message, just find out where your local team is and just come down and give it a go. It's exactly what I did back in 2008 when I got started. I just turned up and gave it a go. I've been heavily involved ever since. And that's all I encourage everybody, just to try it out. And you won't be disappointed. Like I said, it kind of caters for everybody, all skill levels, all ages, all ability levels, because there are people who want to strive and try and make national teams, and some people want to travel to Australia and play, and we've had plenty who've done that. And others just come down for the social aspect, get to know a few people, like-minded people. There's always a great kind of atmosphere after games as well, but maybe a barbecue if the weather is good, or a couple of drinks, or maybe supporting one of our local sponsors and things like that. Another option then would be, of course, if you're in either the universities in Cork or elsewhere, just look it up. There's AFL clubs, MTU AFL and UCC AFL for men's and women's. Just come down, give it a go, and I can't guarantee it, but I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. You know, it's just great fun.
Brilliant. Well, Owen, thank you so much for joining me on the show, and definitely very best of luck to both the men's and women's national teams over at the Transatlantic Cup in Toronto. We'll be cheering you on here from the Big Red Bench.
I really appreciate it. Thanks very much for having me.
Red Bench, it is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you, and I've got lots more to come in the second half of the show. Let's have a chat about the Belgian Grand Prix, shall we? Who would have thought that we'd be talking about a George Russell win at Spa when he started from P6 today? You have to hand it to him. It looked like his teammate was going to take the win today, but around lap 26, Russell said, "We need to think about a one stop." And that is exactly what he did. He made that call. He made those hard tyres last for 34 laps and made his own destiny, ultimately earning his second win of the season. And it has to be said, he had a lot of defending to do in those final four laps from his teammate Lewis Hamilton. There were no team orders. The drivers were just told to leave each other reasonable space. And I think Lewis Hamilton will be a bit disappointed by the fact that he didn't get the win when he had led for a significant period of the race, but I think he certainly can't have any complaints about the result, because it was earned fair and square by Russell, and Hamilton ultimately couldn't find a way past his teammate in those last few laps despite having much fresher tyres. And overall, it was a surprise 1-2 finish for Mercedes, I think it's fair to say, which is a fantastic turnaround for them from the start of the season, and also a great bit of momentum for them to take into the summer break and the second part of the season, that they hadn't looked particularly quick in free practice, and indeed they walked back some of their upgrades from earlier in the weekend, which hadn't been working, and obviously that's proved to be the right decision. So a couple of instances there from Mercedes of being flexible and adaptable enough to make those decisions in changing conditions and get the job done. So congratulations to them. Meanwhile, it was an underwhelming day in the end for Sergio Perez. He had popped up in P3 in qualifying, which turned into P2 thanks to his teammate Max Verstappen taking that 10 place grid penalty for exceeding his engine quota for the year. I say popped up because, considering the run of Q1 eliminations that Perez had been producing up to that point, it looked like his fortunes might be taking a turn for the better, but ultimately the podium eluded him still today. As the lights went out, he dove literally into the path of Lewis Hamilton at the start, but he still couldn't prevent the Mercedes driver from taking P2. And there was a slightly strange situation later on in the race. Max Verstappen found himself in a bit of a tricky situation as he was trying to overtake George Russell for P6, because Russell was within DRS range of Perez in front of him, with Verstappen behind Russell. So Perez was in effect helping the Mercedes driver to stay ahead of Max in that scenario. Now, Perez was actually called in to pit at that point, which freed up Verstappen because Russell pitted as well. But Perez's blushes were spared by that pick call. And it has to be said as well that he was complaining on team radio throughout the race about the energy deployment of his car not working effectively. So it is difficult, of course, to say how much of an impact exactly it had on his race, but Checo himself definitely didn't feel like he had all the tools that he needed at his disposal. And I think it was a pretty underwhelming day too for Max Verstappen. You know, just a few months ago, if you had seen that Verstappen was starting from 11th place, you would have still expected him to pretty comfortably slice through the field and finish in a podium place, if not in P1. But that's no longer the case. And I think today's race was maybe the clearest illustration we've seen yet of how much the other teams have cut down Red Bull's dominance of the last couple of years, and indeed of the start of the season. And it did actually look quite good for Verstappen at the start, because by lap two, he had already made his way from P11 to P8. But a DRS train developed behind George Russell in P5 all the way down to Alonso in P9, and Verstappen was sandwiched right in there. So that really put a stopper in his plans to steam through the field, despite them being bunched so close together. And he did well, it has to be said, to keep Lando Norris behind him. Norris was pushing, he went charging down Max Verstappen, but both drivers were told they could push to the end at that point around lap 31, once Verstappen did flag with his engineer that he was starting to feel the pressure from the McLaren behind him. And Norris did get to within DRS range of Verstappen with 6 laps left in the race, but as I say, somehow Verstappen did manage to keep Norris behind him. So some you know, the driving skills were still being displayed, but I think far from what, you know, the kind of results that Max Verstappen is used to, and the kind of results certainly that he enjoys. Speaking of McLaren drivers on a charge, Oscar Piastri, he was looking very, very quick out there today. He started in P5, he was in third by lap 25, and after each pit stop he just absolutely went on a surge, particularly when that second round of pit stops came around. It was interesting to hear that Piastri felt comfortable. He was out front at that point, and obviously in clear air, which he referenced and said that he preferred track position rather than a fresh set of tyres. That being said, he did pit on lap 30 for that fresh set of tyres, and unfortunately way overshot his pit box, which resulted in a 4.4 second stop, which would be slow for McLaren, and it has to be said, slow in general for the paddock. He came out behind Charles Leclerc, but I think that overshot of the pit box was pretty much the only blot on Oscar Piastri's copybook today, because immediately after that stop he was again on a charge. He had more than enough pace to get past Charles Leclerc on lap 36 when chasing down Lewis Hamilton, who at that point was 5 seconds up the road, and he was right within striking range of those two Mercedes in the lead by the final lap. But ultimately he just ran out of road, ran out of laps. There wasn't time to get into a proper battle with them, but you would have to say he looked very quick and will be very happy, I think, to have taken that podium after starting from P5, similar to George Russell, you know, showing great pace, great race craft, which is something that Piastri has mentioned he's worked really hard on, particularly this year. And I think he'll have to be happy with that result today. And on that note, I think with so many changes of momentum, varying race winners so far this season, I do wonder who will be happiest heading into the summer break. I think after that 1-2 result today, you'd have to say that Mercedes will certainly be pleased. And so too will McLaren, who now do seem to have the fastest car on the grid. But will they regret the drama of that positional swap between their two drivers at the last Grand Prix when we get the sharp end of the season? Only time will tell. Max Verstappen, I would think, will to a certain degree use the summer break to try and reset. With that being said, I don't think that he believes he's the root of very many of the issues that Red Bull have been having. So I wonder whether he'll just take it as the break that it is intended to be. But we are now heading into that summer break of 4 weeks until the Dutch Grand Prix. He'll certainly be looking forward to that, because all those orange flares will be back out again. They are very, very enthusiastic supporters of their hometown hero there. It's on the weekend of August 23rd and it starts off the final 10 races of the 2024 season. And as I mentioned earlier, we've had so many different winners at this point, both from a team and a driver perspective. I really, really hope that that is what we're going to see more of for the rest of the season. And I'm pretty sure that it is, because those teams outside of Red Bull are really cutting down that gap. You would say maybe with the exception of Ferrari, they could do with stepping things up a bit and getting back to where they were perhaps a couple of months ago, when it looked like they may be the team that was going to put it up to Red Bull to the largest extent. I think we'd like to see them get back there, because as I said many times before, even for the neutrals, no matter who you are, if you're a fan of Formula One, if you're a casual supporter or viewer, Formula One is always the better for having a strong Ferrari team out there. Let's see what happens the rest of the year. And it would appear that the drama is not yet over from the Belgian Grand Prix, because when I recorded that segment after the race, there was an investigation into George Russell and his Mercedes, which has now resulted in him being disqualified. So it's been a few hours since George Russell's Mercedes took the checkered flag, but the stewards have indeed disqualified him for having an underweight car, meaning that that win has been scratched off and passed to his teammate Lewis Hamilton. In fairness to George, until that decision, he had won the race, as far as we knew, fair and square. So it didn't feel reasonable to do a redo on everything that I'd said about the race, because he did still drive very well and was very clever in his racecraft. But here we are, disqualified. And not only is it an inherited win for Hamilton, but it's obviously also going to have a negative consequence on Mercedes in terms of the points that they would lose from that win being revoked. So it isn't necessarily something to celebrate from Lewis Hamilton's perspective either, by it being another win to add to his lengthy statistics at this point of his career. And this is a rule that's very important, but it gets very much into the technical nitty-gritty of Formula One. Essentially, every car that takes part in a Grand Prix must come back to Parc Fermé and be able to hit a minimum weight, which is determined by the FIA. The drivers are weighed, the fuel is taken out and measured, everything is monitored down to the last decimal point. The logic here being that a lighter car will naturally be a faster car, and if your car is deemed to be too light, then essentially you've earned your result based on an unfair advantage over the other drivers, and in this case you are disqualified. In George's case, we're talking about the car being underweight by about 1.5 kilograms. So as I say, these are fine, fine margins, but they do matter. And they do obviously carry very heavy consequences. It's similar in a way to VAR, because these measurements can only be taken after the race has finished, and the decisions then can take quite some time as well, because they have to recheck all the data. So just like you might score a goal in a soccer match, have your celebration, etc., only to have it referred to VAR and ruled offside, the drivers still get their podium celebrations, but you might find out hours later that they've been disqualified, as is the case here. Obviously, it's a huge disappointment for Russell and Mercedes, but rules are rules, as the saying goes. As I mentioned, Lewis Hamilton promoted to P1, Oscar Piastri to P2, and Ferrari's Charles Leclerc will now move up from that P4 to a podium spot. Okay, I do want to mention the women's rugby sevens team, who I had said it in the roundup at the start of the show. Unfortunately, they lost their opening group game to Team GB earlier on today, 21 points to 12. However, they have just had a huge win while we've been on air over South Africa, 38 points to nil. And there are some fantastic tries in that game. I'd highly encourage you to go and check them out. Just really great bounce back from the girls after that first round loss. So congratulations to them, and fingers crossed they can bring that positive reaction forward. We are, I was hoping to get you some reaction from the All-Ireland, which of course Armagh came out on top in that game. A reminder again of the final scoreline, it was Armagh 1-11 to Galway 13 points. Unfortunately, it's because I imagine it's been so hectic at Croke Park, we don't have audio down yet, bar the full-time report from Tommy Rooney, so I'm going to play that for you now.
It is full time in Croke Park, and for just the second time ever, Armagh have won Sam Maguire, beating Galway by a point on a scoreline of 111 to 13 points in the 2024 All-Ireland Senior Football Championship Final. Armagh's squad depth and subs off the bench have been talked about all year long, and once more today, they made the difference. Just a minute after being introduced, Stephen Campbell went on a scintillating run by the Cusack stand. He cut and fired a hand pass across the square, and fullback Aaron McKay came charging through to bat the ball to the net. It was the 46th minute of the game, and the first time Armagh took the lead. They would not relinquish it. Galway tried. Paul Conroy and Cian Darcy were exceptional, kicking 3 points each. Johnny Maher was immense, but has been their tail all year. Injuries caught up with them. Their accuracy let them down late on too. And with many of their key players ineffective or withdrawn, Armagh held on just about. They'd only kicked two more scores in the 30 minutes of play after the goal, but they were huge. One was created by subs Shilushin O'Neill. He set up Niall Grimley, but for Rushin himself, kicked their final score of the game in the 65th minute. That put Armagh 3 clear. Darcy and McDade responded for Galway, but they just couldn't find the equaliser. Sam Maguire is heading to Armagh for the winter for just the second time ever. Kieran McGeaney captained them to the title in 2002, and today he manages the team to glory in his 10th season as manager. Full-time score in Croke Park, and it's Armagh who have won the All-Ireland title on a scoreline of 111 to 13 points.
Okay, and as I mentioned earlier on in the show, of course, Cork Camogie had that fantastic win yesterday in their All-Ireland semi-final, which has set them up for a match against Galway in the final. And just in case you missed it, I want to make sure that we get reaction from that game. This was Boss Germani speaking after the win.
Okay, Ger, first of all, congratulations into an All-Ireland final as the Cork manager. Proud moment for you and obviously for your family and everything. Before we talk about that, lots of work to do before that, but what are your immediate thoughts just after?
It's about winning. Like, when I can't be foot perfect, I don't think there's no team played well in the semi-final. Like, yeah. It's not about winning. I'd rather win by a point than 10 or lose in the other way around, you know, because by 10. But look, Dublin started well. They played very well the last set. They probably could have got a goal or two. But look, that's probably a bit of our rustiness. Defensively, Todd, as we went on, we improved immensely. I thought we were very strong. Lord up the centre there, all the backs did quite well, and Thompson midfield and Aoife, and we got the scores and it mattered for 17's good return anyway.
It certainly is. And from the bench again, something you talked about at the start of the year that you wanted a panel, you wanted people coming on challenging for positions. You've got that. Have you got a few question marks and things to decide now between here and the final?
We have really. I suppose, look, the team is very just settled there the last two or three matches, but it's competition we needed. We said there, myself and Liam earlier on there, that, and it's still the same. We said from there in the last two or three weeks, people show up and you saw Ola Mullins come on there did well, and Clodagh Finn, Sarsha got a great goal, and I think that's why we're doing well. I suppose individually we have some very good players, but the team will win the match for you. And like last year, we showed you need subs come on, and I think they made the difference again today at times. I know the game was probably a bit, we were a bit ahead, but you need those fresh legs come on to change it and look, put the other team under pressure.
The slow start, is that anything to do with the gap?
I don't know. I think we slow start. I think we're ahead of there the last 2 years. Didn't we intentionally go to slow us down? But I think to give them their credit, they were up for it. Like, it's not our semi-final. Yeah. No team goes out. Like, I think there's 4-2 after 10 minutes, 5-2. We were quite happy because like Dublin have improved immensely. And like, if they got the two goals early on, it would have been a big difference. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the scoreline at half time did them justice, but I think that's the sign of a good team. I think like, we were clinical and a bit cynical at times. And I think you need to have that, you know. And I think the goal we got before half time, but as I said, Dublin could have had two goals. You know, Emmy Lee made two very good saves, you know. And for me, I think it's the balance that we have, you know. It's the recovery. Like, they got the goal, Wim Dunga to score. They missed the goal, Wim Dunga to score. And the same good team.
Irrespective of who you play in the final with Galway or Tip, you know the challenge that's coming. So, I mean, it's going to be incredibly tough. How important is the time on the training pitch over the next couple of weeks?
Look, we did a lot of work in the last 3 weeks. We've trained extremely hard. Liam did a great job with them. I suppose it's a different battle now. You have two season teams that we're up against. Give Dublin their credit. They've come from nowhere, really, this year. They won the league. They're very good. But I suppose Tip have been going very good, and Galway are always there. There's not between ourselves and Galway. Like, they were missing good for the day we played in Beloit. We take nothing of it, but I suppose the final's there to be won now. That's our aim, to win the final and was our goal from the start of the year, to get back to the final. I think that's the first job done, next job done is to win it.
Just finally from me, the support you got today, huge numbers to see them in the Cork jerseys. Must have been a lovely feeling to see that when you went out on the pitch.
I've been involved 3 years, yeah, and I'd say it was the biggest crowd I've seen at a Camogie match from Cork, and I had to thank the supporters. But I think the Camogie board are driving on a bit as well, and I think the girls' clubs, like, I mean, we have a good variety of players from everywhere, and I thought the media do build it up for us, which is great, and just hopefully, you know, we'll have a crowd in Croke Park, and hopefully the intermediates will win at 6 o'clock and that'll give a bigger crowd.
Excellent stuff. See you in Croke Park.
Right, sure.
Absolutely, a very important point made there at the end of that interview. The support, got to make sure that it's there for the girls. We were up for the lads very much so last weekend, so we need to make sure that we do the same for those Cork Camogie ladies on the 11th of August in that All-Ireland final against Galway. We're going to hear from Laura Tracy now.
Okay, first of all, hearty congratulations. Back to an All-Ireland final. Sluggish start, but you got from the second quarter on, you were the better team.
Yeah, we knew Dublin would come out today and be extremely physical and really go after the game. They showed that against Kilkenny, you know, that they bring a huge level of intensity. So I felt like we eventually got to terms with that, and then we pushed on with our own game.
Tough physical match with Stanty going into the All-Ireland final. Would you prefer a tighter match all over?
Look, I suppose we're looking at ourselves all the time and trying to hit our own targets, so I suppose we'll be happy enough that we hit our targets today. And we always say if we do hit those kinds of targets and our standards, well, then we should come out with a win. So we're always just looking at ourselves, really, and the same again for the next day.
The next day, All-Ireland final, Croke Park. What does that feel like from a player? I know you're only just minutes off the ground, but looking forward to something like that. They're special days in your career.
Absolutely, and you know, as a kid you always grow up and that's where you want to be, and it's a big reward, I suppose, for girls, the amount of work that we put in again this year, you know. So there's one more step till we lift that O'Duffy Cup, but we've an awful lot of work to do now for the next 2 weeks.
Congratulations, looking forward to seeing you there.
Cheers, Jerry, can't wait.
Orla Cahalan, fantastic result for Cork into an All-Ireland final. How does that sound?
Oh, amazing. Like, we knew it was going to be a tougher game now coming up here than the game down in the park, but I think we got over the line there in the end, so thank God.
Talk me through your goal, because it happened very quickly, but you finished it superbly.
Oh yeah, it was, I knew before the game, like the whole week, we were just like, we're going after this early on, so goal was on our mind in the full forward line, so I just went for it.
And your second one laid on a bit fortuitous, but you'll take them.
Yeah, I knew Sorsha now from club, she was going to get the ball in from the sideline. To be honest, I thought she was going to put it over the bar, but I was ready at the mark to bounce onto it.
For this team and for the family, you had like a 4-week lead in. Was that a bit long, like that? Maybe you were a bit slow to get going?
Yeah, I suppose thinking of it at the start, it was a bit of a lead, like we thought it was going to be a bit of a drag, but we were so busy coming up to it, like we had training weekends and we kind of just kept ourselves busy, so on our training matches were as hard as any game, so...
And just finally, from your point of view, I mean, obviously there's a lot of competition for places in that forward line, a lot of things that need to be, you know, you need to be sharp. These next 2 weeks in our training are going to be fairly intense.
Oh yeah, everyone's pushing for places on that team, no one's safe at all. So yeah, I can't wait for the next 2 weeks now leading up to the match.
And some exciting in the Cahalan family house, a lot going on at the moment between the football and the Camogie.
Yeah, I suppose after last weekend it's not so bad to move on quickly from it, not dwell on any. That's the thing about GAA, you know, don't have time to dwell on any losses, so yeah, the lads are playing today, so we wish them the best of luck as well.
Very well said. All the best in the All-Ireland final. Look forward to seeing you there.
Thank you, Ger.
All right, Laura Hayes, back to another All-Ireland final. Fantastic achievement for you. 4 clear in a row that Cork will be there, but first quarter was a bit sluggish, but you got going once you got those early goals.
Yeah, look, I suppose job done at the end of the day, and that's the main thing. No complaints being back into an All-Ireland final, that's for sure. But yeah, look, slow start, but I guess having not played in 4 weeks, even though we trained really, really hard, that probably was going to happen for the first 10 minutes. But I think once we settled, started playing our own game, we kind of got into the swing of things. Well done.
Huge support here today, but for both counties, great to see both main stands full. From a Camogie player's point of view, lovely to play in that atmosphere.
Yeah, it was actually really loud at the start. It was like brilliant, really good, like, to return to that now after the 4 week break. But yeah, look, it's great that we have that. I think it was something that was said during the week, but look, there was great support for the hurlers last week, and we hope that those flags stay up now for the All-Ireland final in 2 weeks time.
I've asked some of the other players, the butterflies that you realise you're now heading to Croke Park for an All-Ireland final, I doubt that ever changes.
No, to be honest, it's a weird one. It hasn't sunk in yet, no, in a way, day, like you're so focused on getting the job done, you don't really get to think past that. But yeah, look, I'd say we'll really get to be grateful now and enjoy tonight, and then it'll be head down for after that.
Just finally for you and for your club, something to look forward to, a lot of excitement now, but you got to get the job done.
Yeah, exactly. Look, to be fair, my club are always brilliant to support me. They always bring a bus, or they're great to promote me online or whatever, so I'm obviously really grateful for that, and I'm sure there'll be a bit of hype at home, but I'll try to keep my head down a small bit, and yeah, hopefully, look, come Sunday 2 weeks, they'll be up there again.
Excellent stuff, Laura. All the best in the final.
Thanks very much.
Yeah, Laura Hayes and Orla Cahalan speaking alongside Laura Tracy there. Now, I just have one more very important job to do before the end of the show, which is to announce the winner of our giveaway again, with huge thanks to Forefront Sports. And the winner of that pair of VIP hospitality tickets to the KPMG Women's Irish Open on Thursday, the 29th of August, is Katrina, who's from Cloyne. She, of course, knew that the answer to my question at the start of the show was a caddy. Congratulations, Katrina. Now, I hope you have a fantastic time cheering on the Irish contingent at the KPMG Women's Irish Open. That's everything for me this evening, folks. Thanks, as always, for tuning in to the Sunday edition of The Big Red Bench with me, Sarah Mackenzie Foley. I hope you have a lovely rest of your Sunday, and don't go anywhere, because Green on Red is coming up next.